This will be fun and quick as long as I don't go in down any neurology or epigenetics black holes where we never make it out. So I wanted to bring back up Dr. Forsman's Transcend slide because I think this is a wonderful... the reason I enjoy giving this talk is that there's a very exciting thing that's going on in whatever you want to call it, medicine, healthcare, wellness, that everyone's starting to use the same language, the same concepts, the same ideas. If you go to some conferences now where they'll have physical therapists and chiropractors together, they're actually agreeing about the research and discussing the same thing. You'll see a well-trained physician like Dr. Forsman saying a lot of things that chiropractors have been saying for hundreds of years, and that finally physical therapists are starting to say out in the last 10 years. So it's very exciting. And this acronym is huge. Because we know wellness is a set of species-specific requirements across the board. Not one is more important than the other. Just like brushing your teeth, you wouldn't brush the front and not the back. You're going to brush all your teeth. And each level of species-specific requirements has no priority. They're all required. So good nutrition, exercise, stress relief, healthy interactions with your family and friends and coworkers and community, all these things, water, they all come into play as things that you all need on a specific level to achieve wellness rather than put one aside and not the other one. So this was a great acronym, and that book's a really good one, so I recommend getting it. And my reference for the same sort of concept is this book called The Wellness and Prevention Paradigm by James Chestnut. He goes into a more specific detail with the research that sort of proves this point, if you want to say it's a point to prove. And I'm going to refer to that book a couple times as we talk. So that was that part. So let's actually get to the foundations of exercise itself. So a lot of people are, I wouldn't say misinformed about exercise. I think they're doing something that it's not actually doing a lot of times. A lot of times we think we have to exercise in order to maintain the machine itself, as in I need cardiovascular exercise to make sure my heart works good. I need to go to the gym and pump iron because they told me if I pump iron, I'll lose fat and I'll get strong and all these other things. What people are totally missing these days is the central nervous system function or the epigenetic species-specific requirement of having exercise because it's what we were meant to do as people. The industrial society of the last 100 years where we sit at home for breakfast, then we get in a car and we sit, and we drive to work and then we sit, and then we get back in our car and sit to drive to a gym where we sit on a machine for another hour, and then we go home and sit and watch TV, it's totally wiped out some of the fundamental requirements, things we need to do as people. Physical therapist Gray Cook said we might be one of the last generations that has the ability to squat. Most people are losing their ability to squat. Now, other countries still perform communications in a squatting. They'll sit around their family in a squatting position. They'll still farm in a squatting position. We're going to return to the squat in a little bit with an activity that I want to show you. But my point is, there's a lot of activities that we acquire as children or that we acquire when we're first developing as infants. So one of the first things we might acquire is the ability to move our head and neck so that we can feed. And then we start to learn to acquire the ability to crawl or roll over from our upper extremities and roll over with our lower extremities so that we can roll over onto our bellies and then onto our backs. And then we start to learn the ability to crawl and then to half kneel and then squat and stand. And all along the way, there are little checks and balances. One of them is called gravity. It's 9.8 meters per second squared. If you stand from a squatting position as an infant and then you try to stand up and you do it improperly, the earth will correct you. And then over time, you learn what's the right way to do it. And that goes the same with crawling, kneeling, walking, sitting, all these things. Now, over time, we become specialists. We really get good at what we're really good at doing, and we tend to throw away the stuff we're not good at or we don't like to do anymore. So if you never like to squat, you're probably not a good squatter anymore. And over time, we become specialists. Now, in evolutionary terms, when things become specialists, that's usually the end of the line. But adaptable species, people who are variable and can do many different things, they tend to be much more successful in whatever they're trying to do. So to kind of prove that point, that this is not about your ability to be strong or your ability to have specific strength or range of motion. I want us all to stand up and check this out. It's really easy. Just so stand up for me. And I want to see people bend down and try to touch their toes. Just go down as far as you can and bend down and touch your toes. This is an assessment. Okay. Now, we're going to stand back up. Very simply, put your hands above your head, feet shoulder width apart, and then try to squat. Great. Okay. And we'll do that one again. Okay. And then one more time, stand up and try to bend your toes. Bend down and touch your toes. Okay. Now, we're going to do something. This is a concept. Sir, you wouldn't mind being an example? I'm sure you wouldn't. I brought him to do this. There's a concept in rehabilitation called reverse patterning. When someone has forgot what long story short, there's a part of your brain that says, I want to do things. And then it'll tell the part in your brain that does the things, go do it. Like bend down and pick a vegetable out of the ground. If you have lost that message of how to do it appropriately, you're going to have one of these awkward squats. Like, oh God, I forgot how to do that. Now, what we do in reverse patterning in rehab is we reteach it from the ground up. So we do the reverse. So your squat was pretty good, but I want you to show everyone again. Go hands up, feet shoulder width apart, and then squat down. Now you can see he can get to about 90 degrees, but his body's bent forward like this. And that's how he compensates. Now this is what I want you to do. I want you to get into what I call the vegetable picker position. Just hang out down here.
The catcher?
Yep, the catcher position. And put your hands straight up. And now come up. And do that about 3 times while I'm talking. So just, kind of do it a couple times. Get back to the vegetable picker position. And then back up. Now what you do with reverse pattern is you connect people back to what they learned how to do as they were children. How does a child learn how to squat and then stand as they go from the ground up? But what do we do as adults? We go from the ground down. We've reversed it around. So after we've done that a couple times, now we can say, get shoulder feet apart, hands above head, and then go down and do a squat. He's getting a little more acquisition, a little more upright. And then you would do that over time, over a couple weeks, and he would sort of get it, and then you could add load to it. So thank you. That was great. It's not a suggestive thing. I didn't do any neuro-linguistic programming or anything like that. It's actually something it's a proven technique over time to teach people how to, and then eventually you can add load to it. So this is some of the foundations of exercise, as in there's a neurological basis and a neurological need for exercise, not just because it makes us happy and all these other things. We've been exercising for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years. I don't know, hundreds of thousands of years. Yeah. The last 100 years, we haven't been doing too good. So as in the Kurzweil transcend sort of frame of mind, what we've been missing is an assessment. And we've had other assessments in exercise. We can do VO2 max. We can put someone on a shuttle run like in the NFL. We can do all these things to sort of quantitatively assess what they do and then try to improve it by improving their strength or whatever. What we've been missing is a qualitative assessment of how people move. What is the quality of their movement? There are 3 risk factors for injuring yourself. One is history of a previous injury or a surgery in the area. 2 is asymmetrical movement from one side to the other, or asymmetrical strength from one side to the other, or asymmetrical flexibility. And 3rd is just plain user error. We call that stupidity, doing stuff you shouldn't be doing in the first place. So what we've done is we've been able to go in a peer-reviewed manner with knowledge and research of some of the 7 basic movement patterns that a person should be able to accomplish, and then we can measure for asymmetries from side to side and give them an overall score. So now we have a really strong assessment tool for how somebody moves. And when we talk about yogic exercise, which I'll get to in a second, there's a lot of different terms for it. But what we're really talking about is your ability to acquisition movement, to display control and proprioceptive ability, which means balance, and your nervous system to be able to do the movement itself. So from a score of 0 to 21, we'll put people through these 7 movements, and we'll just test. Can you do it perfectly? Can you do it pretty good? Or can you do it really shoddy? Or did it hurt? As soon as it hurts, it's a screen. It's not an assessment. There's a big difference between what a screen and an assessment is. A screen means as soon as it hurts, the screen is over. You need to go get it treated. You obviously need some attention. Now, as an assessment tool, we look at that and we say, if you scored, the research says if you scored around a 15 or a 16 on this test, you are probably within a certain percentage points not likely to injure yourself doing any of your normal activities or doing any of the exercises you're used to doing. The average overall across the board when the research is done is 13.5. So the average in America of people are doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing, so they're probably going to hurt themselves. So they're running that risk. The average that I've been doing at Middle Path Medicine in Arroyo Grande, California, this community is scoring a 10 usually, a 10 or an 11. And most people, you probably have one of the best squats I've seen in about a month. Most people are like this and they stop. And their body shuts off and says, don't go any further. I don't know what's going to happen if you go any further. I might not get back up. It's a lot of I've fallen, I can't get back up situations in our community. And that's very scary. Like we were talking about before, if a female can't stand on one leg for 30 seconds with her eyes open, she has a risk of falling and injuring a hip. It's the opposite. If you can stand on your leg for 30 seconds, one leg at a time, eyes open, you reduce your risk of falling and fracturing a hip by 85%. Most people can probably get 5 seconds when they come in to see me at the most. They're just doing this. They have no acquisition. They have no recollection of how to do these things that are species-specific requirements. So this is a way to assess and bring people back to a level. You know, Mary, you've scored a 10. I know you like to run marathons. Maybe you shouldn't be running marathons just yet. Maybe we should work our way up to it. These are the kind of conversations we can have because now we have a baseline. And this baseline has been set on football players, Navy SEALs, firefighters, average Joes. So it's across the board. So now once you've got somebody... Yes?
What is the range?
The range?
Yeah, you said people scored 16 or some 10. What is... The whole range of...
It's 21 to 0.
0 to 21.
0 to 21. No one ever gets a 21. It's very hard to do. I saw one guy get an 18 and he's a machine. He's about 60. He's really, really good at what he does. And he owns a gym, so he knows what he's doing. So when you've actually got the number and you've actually got somebody sort of assessed and you know what they're doing, now you can put them in appropriate exercises. This is what I use to determine kind of how I want people to try to exercise. And it's called the performance pyramid or optimal performance pyramid. And what we want to do is we want to place people in certain categories of what they can acquire. If you have really bad movement, as in you have really bad one-leg stand ability, you can't do an appropriate squat, you can't lunge and get back up off the ground, you need to work on that stuff before you start building strength and endurance. Because if you put muscle, which is the performance level, on top of bad movement, which is the baseline, the fundamental, you're going to just build a really strong bad movement. And that leads to injuries. So this performance pyramid is fantastic. Where do most things seem to fit? Where do most of the beneficial exercises seem to fit? Down here in this area down here. Movement fundamentals. The yogic exercises are called, in my world, they're called... I got a new term for it. I'll give you a new term later. They're called self-limiting exercises. What a self-limiting exercise means is that your brain gives you little speed checks, a little speed bumps along the way. You think about it before you do it. Barefoot running is a great self-limiting exercise. You know, running is not. Running's a very bad exercise. You put these pillows on your feet, and then you just go out until it hurts, and then you come back, and then you do that 5 times a week and you can't figure out why your back and your legs hurt. But if you have minimalist shoes on or you're running barefoot or you're running on the beach or on grass and you finally figure out what the appropriate heel strike is and what it feels like to actually have your feet touch the ground, your body starts to tell you. You get this brain-body connection. I think that's good enough. I think I'm going to walk the rest of the way. These are some explanations of self-limiting exercise.
What is the
That's the functional movement screen. That's this. So this is all developed by, it's the functional movement system. It's a system that's been developed by chiropractors, researchers, and personal trainers, physical therapists. So once we've acquired a good baseline, good fundamental movement baseline, then we can start to put a load on it. We can challenge it. We can put in strength. We can put in endurance. Once we know we can run, now we can sprint with it. Once we know that we can squat appropriately, we can put load on it. And then once we've got some mobility and some strength, now we can start doing the fun stuff, the stuff that everyone likes to run to, the skill-specific activities. A lot of times you'll see people run right to golf but have no flexibility and no strength in their quads. And they can't figure out why their game completely falls apart by the fourth hole. You have no endurance, you don't have no stability in your legs, and you have no flexibility. Why does it hurt? But I don't blame them, because all the skill-specific activities are fun. They're the stuff that we all think we want to do. That's the good stuff. But if you haven't done your homework or you haven't earned it yet, it's very ill-advised to go up to the skill-specific activities. Okay. So that brings me to stretching. Stretching is good. Who agrees? Yes. Stretching is something you should do for 30 minutes. Thank you. There's two different types of stretching. Static stretching, where you hold the stretch for God knows how long and then let it go. Or there's dynamic stretching, where you stretch with some sort of movement involved with it. When we did research to determine which one was better, dynamic stretching usually wins every time. Static stretching, where you may hold your arm across like this. Sorry, Phil, the mic. And then hold and count it out, is still good. There's still some benefit to it, and I don't disagree with it, but the research seems to indicate if you hold that stretch for over 30 seconds, you're actually going to lose power, you're going to lose strength, and you could risk some performance differences or even injuring yourself. So we recommend dynamic stretching. There's a lot of books. There's a lot of different ways to do dynamic stretching, and they're a little more fun. They get you warmed up. So instead of thinking your warm-up is this, we actually get you moving, and you start to warm up, and then you can go into your activity. Yoga. So let me ask you a question from what you know about yoga. And you can raise your hands as you feel fit. Where does yoga fit here? Is it a movement fundamental? Raise your hand if you think so. Is it a performance issue? Or is it a skill-specific activity? It's actually a little bit of all three. But I can't tell you how many patients I have coming in, and I say, you don't move very well. You're very unstable. You can't even stand on one foot. What do you do for exercise? I do yoga. I'm like, well, you shouldn't be at all. You should be down here practicing your balance and coordination. They're like, well, I do. I do yoga. I'm a yoga person. Yoga is more of a skill-specific activity. A lot of people think yoga is a stretching move, but you'll actually get more strength from yoga than you will flexibility in the beginning. And then eventually you start to acquire some movement. You start to acquire some flexibility. But then it becomes a very technically heavy exercise. It's very brain-involved, focusing on breathing, focusing on integrating posture and control, what I'm talking about, self-limiting exercises. So it's actually at the top of the pyramid, not at the bottom. But it is a little bit of all three. Tai Chi is the same scenario. But the reason why they're considered skill-specific exercises is because you do have to focus on breathing. Another term for skill-specific that I learned today that I never heard before was natural corrective exercise, which means if you do it naturally and you practice it long enough, you will start to correct problems on your own without having to go to any specific professional to do it. But, of course, it would be good to be assessed to see if it's safe because it's a skill-specific activity before going straight into it. And some of your Tai Chi and yoga experts can coach you through it. Some of them throw you right to the wolves, which is one of my problems with a lot of places today where you go in. You just start doing what everybody else is doing. CrossFit's a big problem. We have a big problem with CrossFit with that. There's no assessment with CrossFit. They just throw you in and say, do the workout like everybody else, but don't do it as hard if you're not as good at it. Just kind of like slow down a little bit. I have a lot of patients from CrossFit because they can't even do a simple squat, and they have them doing Olympic lifting squats, which means holding a lot of heavy weight over your head, dropping down and exploding back up. And it's like, whoa, maybe not yet. Cardio. Cardio is very important. I don't have anything to say about cardio. Just do it. But consider there are different ways to do cardio, too. High-intensity interval training of cardio versus just getting on a treadmill, turning on the TV, and doing this is obviously more stimulating to the brain and to your body, and it's more challenging. Remember, what we're doing with cardio is we're trying to make the heart stronger. We don't train a muscle to get stronger by doing this over and over again. So why would we train a heart muscle to get stronger by just doing this over and over again? We want to change the pace. We want to change the speed. We want to change the challenge. We want the heart rate variability, which means your body's ability to change its heart rate appropriately and get back to the right speed. We want to do that as quickly as we can. But say you're somebody who's at, I always go back to the pyramid, it always counts. Say you're somebody who does not have good movement fundamentals. You're not ready to do strength, endurance, and power like running cone drills or tying a parachute to your back and sprinting to do high endurance stuff. You're like, I just need to get moving, man. I just need to sweat it out and lose some pounds. Well, there's a great one for that, and it's called walking. Walking just 30 minutes, 15 minutes out, 15 minutes back is fantastic. If you don't like what you did the day before, you can go out of your house and turn left and go the other way. There's always something new to experience with walking. You don't need any special equipment. You don't even need shoes if you go to the park and walk in the grass or walk on the beach. But there are some very specific documented benefits of walking. So I think everyone should at least look to, even if you do a lot of really cool stuff, I don't know, like you're a ninja master, I don't know what you do, but at least look back to walking a little bit because of these benefits. And there's going to be a lot of them, so don't write them down. Prevents up to 91% of cases of obesity and type 2 diabetes. Prevents up to 50% of all cases of heart disease. Reduces risk of stroke by 25 to 30%. Prevents up to 50% of all stroke deaths. Reduces congestive heart disease by 63%. Reduces hospital readmission for heart failure by 70%. Normalizes blood pressure and reduces risk of developing high blood pressure. Restores and maintains heart and blood vessel health. Restores and maintains normal cholesterol, triglyceride levels. Reduces the risk of breast cancer by up to 60%. Reduces pancreatic cancer in overweight people by 50%. Reduces lung cancer, even in smokers, by 72%. Walking half an hour. Reduces melanoma. And this is how it's written. That's right, skin cancer apparently from the sun by over 72%. Prevent up to 50% of colon cancer. Reduce risk of developing and improve outcomes to those with rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis. Prevent osteoporosis and increase new bone formation. Increase strength, flexibility, and balance. Decrease gallbladder removal by 20%. And decrease gallstones. Improve digestion and decrease indigestion. Improve bowel function and elimination. Increase immune system function. Increase macrophage, anti-tumor activity, and antioxidant levels. Decrease all causes of mortality by 67% in the general population. We might have to pause on that one. Decrease all causes of mortality by 67% in the general population. Decrease all causes of mortality by 50% in the 61 to 81-year-old age group. Prevent up to 40% of cognitive impairment. Prevent up to 62% of Alzheimer's and 52% of dementia. I think I need to walk more. Improve physical function in older adults. Decrease the chance of ever being in a nursing home. Decrease the rate of aging. Enhance learning by 12 times. Increase dopamine and serotonin levels. Decrease depression by 20%, including relapses. Increase growth and healing hormones. Decrease stress and body breakdown hormones. Decrease body fat, obesity, and decrease weight gain. So those are all just the documented benefits. And that doesn't even count all the other ones.
I'm totally stressed because I have an ankle that my doctor just said is totally smashed. So I can't walk. And what I do for exercise is the Pilates reformer. So, and I tried walking. So when all of these situations are going to cure, or walking is going to cure all of these situations, what kind of specimen are you talking about? Are you talking about somebody who's way overweight and they're going to maybe get normal, or you have a normal person and they do this?
I didn't read the study. It was in the Journal of Applied Physiology in 2002. I haven't read the study myself, so I don't know what selection of people they used.
What would be your bet?
They probably used an average semi-healthy population, probably, you know, maybe even out-of-shape college students, but probably in people in their 30s and 40s. They probably had a selection group of 100 or so people. But remember that skill... Remember what we talked about earlier? There are a lot of situations where you might look at an MRI and you might look at an X-ray, and then your doctor might say, that thing's smashed, you're never using it again. Who said? Who said? First, you need a proper assessment. You need some self-inquiry. Maybe you need to start to find the right baseline of what to do. Yeah. And that, all that stuff, All that stuff needs to be revisited, and then we also remember that our risk of future injury is always previous injury, asymmetries, and things like that. And then you have to go with what you got. And typically in the functional movement system, once we hear that people have had severe, serious injuries, it's just not part of the, you know, you got to have a special hand in that. So, but walking is not for out of shape people or in shape people. I walk. I usually do an hour on the weekend, and it hits pretty hard if you get the right hills involved. So it's definitely for everybody. Now, if you can't, I who knows what to say in that situation? Yes, sir.
So you had a whole list of benefits there. Are you telling me if you went out and rode a bicycle for a half hour every day, it would be similar?
I don't think riding a bike would be similar. There are certain things that happen when you are in participate in the gait cycle. One is the compression aspect. One is the proprioceptive aspect of having to maintain balance, and one is switch foot, switching from one side to the other. So it's cross brain activity. I probably imagine that biking has some similar benefits, but I don't have that research. So typically, I try to point people away from anything that's going to deter bad posture, which I seem to see a lot of bicyclists. Bicycle riders use a lot of bad posture, and I tend to deter people away from anything that involves sitting, because there's nothing functional, there's nothing paleo, if you want to talk paleo exercise, about sitting on something and doing something. So I try to get people to keep as much authentic movement, authentic exercise as possible. So that was my cardio ditty. Now, there was one specific piece of that research that they wanted to make very clear. And that was, while this really means that although 30 minutes of walking provides amazing benefits, it does not represent sufficiency with regard to the human genetic blueprint. So what they're trying to say in that phrase is, even though you walk 30 minutes, that's not enough of everything that you need. So if we want to create the scope, first we have stretching, or what we would call yogic movements, which put a demand on yourself to balance yourself and hold it in a position for some period of time, self-limiting exercise. The next one is cardio, and then the next requirement is resistance training. And the funny thing is, people always avoid the thing they're not good at, and people love to avoid resistance training, even though the research is very clear, putting muscle on your body slows the aging process. You can measure people, and as soon as they start losing muscle, you know they're starting to age a bit. You need to put more muscle on. So resistance training can be done in many different ways. Just like Dr. Forsman said, there's many different ways to do it. You don't have to go to the gym and do Olympic weightlifting. You don't have to curl heavy iron. Body weight exercises are fantastic. Gardening is fantastic. One of the best things to accomplish all these things is a good old kettlebell from Russia. The Russian kettlebell is one of the best things to do for people who are out of shape. The research says for people who are out of shape, kettlebells are fantastic. For people who are in shape, kettlebells seem to fall off a little bit in their effectiveness. What a kettlebell does is it forces you to use balance and core stability to balance the object because it's off-centered. So it's not like a hand weight that has equal weight on each side. So you have to use your body to sort of get it into position. So for weight training, it's excellent. For flexibility, it's excellent because you can add flexibility exercises with the weight. And for cardio, it's great because if you want to do anything, you just do it faster and you do more of them and your heart starts pumping and it's really good. Resistance training, if you're not good at it and you're way down here on the scale, seek a professional to teach you how. But make no mistake about it, you've got to have all three. The yogic movements, which involve stretching or flexibility, cardio, resistance training, and you can throw in some kettlebells. They're very, 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 very effective. You can get a good, solid cardio, strength building, and flexibility workout with a kettlebell, just doing the kettlebell swing in about 15 minutes. You can ask Richie back there. We pretty much beat him up once a week with just a kettlebell. We put the timer on 15 minutes, and he's panting pretty hard. So this goes back to self-limiting exercises. The goal is always to return people. You know, we find people who say, I'm a walker. I don't do anything else. A classic is the runner. I'm a runner. That's what I do. I run like the marathon runners. I'm very accomplished. I've ran. And then we get them to try to stand on one foot, and they do this sort of thing like, well, I don't have to do that, though. I run. You know, you've missed a couple steps along the way. So returning to self-limiting exercise or getting people to perform self-limiting exercise is one of the most beneficial things we can do for humanity. Self-limiting exercise, Tai Chi, yoga, jumping rope, balancing yourself on a balance beam, crawling on two legs, rolling around on the ground, running barefoot instead of with shoes on. All these things that are authentic to who we are as human beings are actually what we desire in our brains as human beings. Proprioception is a fancy word for balance, but it's also a neurological input that lets the brain know where we are in space. It lets the brain know that we're doing things, and it gets very excited. It's a need. It's an actual need that we have to perform. And also, if you're in pain, proprioception is really cool because in the nervous system and the spinal tract, proprioception inhibits pain transmission. So there's a lot of times where we'll have people with low back pain and we'll just teach them to stand on one leg and the pain's gone. They compete with each other in the spinal tract. So my final thought on exercise. Don't do any exercise unless there's a goal involved. We're talking about the assessments again, whether it's improving your functional movement score so you can get a higher score, whether it's how far you can walk on a day in the same amount of time. You have to have a goal to exercise or there's no reason to do it whatsoever. How I put that is training must be progressive. You must have a goal to slowly and steadily progress it. Whatever your practice is, if it's lowering your score in golf, if it's learning some new movements in martial arts, which is a self-limiting exercise, it must be progressive. It must have a time set to it on when you reevaluate yourself. This is where assessment is very important. You can't just walk and then think you're just going to walk for the rest of your life because eventually you're just not going to do it anymore. There's no candy at the end of the road. You've got to have some way to remeasure what's going on. There has to be a time frame to it. And it has to require a vision. So obviously the vision is very clear here. Set a goal, have some sort of thing to aspire to, and you'll always be engaged in your exercise. Even all the way down to push-ups. I can only do 2 today. Well, let's try to do 3 tomorrow. Let's try to get up to 4. What is your final goal, though? What do you want? My goal is by the time I'm 40 to dunk a basketball again. On my 40th birthday, I want to get up there and rip the rim down. I might rip my shoulders off, but that's my goal. So always have a goal, have fun, and try to return to these exercises that we did as children because they're fun, they're enjoyable, and they have a big payoff in the end. Thank you. And questions? Any questions on that stuff? Yes, ma'am.
For motivation purposes, have you had any experience about using a complex machine?
Can you describe a complex machine?
It attaches to the muscles and sends vibrations to them.
For what goal?
Well, it gets the body and the blood flowing, and I heard it's
okay, I've seen similar instruments like that. You're probably going to find a very purist answer from me that no one likes. The simplest way to go is probably the best, as in if you want to feel your blood flowing, let's do some squats. Even if you had the fanciest machine in the world for exercise, if you had a treadmill, you're still going to get a better physiological effect just from putting your arms out and squatting up and down over and over again. The research is pretty clear on that. I don't loathe machines. I think machines are very efficient, but I think that we've reduced ourselves to a mechanistic thought pattern. You know, there's a lot of physical therapists that'll see that you have an injured shoulder, and they'll just have you do this with the machine, and then they'll throw some more machines on, then they'll throw an electrical muscle stim on there and say, well, we strengthened your shoulder, it didn't work, that's your problem. What they forgot to incorporate was that there's a joint-by-joint approach to everything. The neck, the shoulder, the upper back, all the way down to the big toe are involved in shoulder movements, and we have to treat ourselves as human beings, not as, no offense to Kurzweil and some of these things, but we have to kind of get back to the human element instead of the technological element when it comes to authentic movement.
I've been around gyms forever, and
you should start hanging out with some Steves too.
Yeah, when I see George's gyms, it just amazes me when I look and see people on a machine, and it's not a judgment of the machine, a bicycle.
They don't know any better.
TVs on watching like the Middle East news. Now there's a real way to get your mind involved.
Yeah, that is not self-limiting. That's a shut-off. But yeah. Yeah, don't do that. Get involved. Use your brain.
Oh, can I make one more recommendation? recommendation?
Yes.
We treat all people, whether they are in shape or out of shape, whether they've been injured or not, whether they are old or young, we treat them all as athletes when we rehab or we exercise them. So, one of my recommendations is a book called Athletic Body and Balance. The athletic title deters a lot of people, but Gray Cook is probably one of the best educators, researchers, and physical therapists on the planet, and he has broken what I just talked about down better than I could. And he's like a southern preacher from Virginia, so he's got a much better way with words than I do. Athletic Body and Balance, Gray Cook.